Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning for our 11th anniversary show is Rick Moranis, the star of the movies Little Shop of Horrors, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Ghostbusters, Spaceballs, and Strange Brew, among others. He's a comedian and comic who retired from show business and now has written and released a delightful album of songs that are all too Jewish. We'll also have a visit from our too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at toojewishradio@yahoo.com. Or visit us on the web at toojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's a very special morning here on Too Jewish, our 11th anniversary show, believe it or not. I can't really believe it myself, to be honest. We've now presented 576 episodes of Too Jewish to the world, each one unique and, of course, excellent. Anniversaries are always an excuse to look back and see just what it is we are celebrating and what it was we thought we were doing when we started all of this in the first place. But first, we should pop a champagne cork to get us going. And now our traditional anniversary toast, L'chaim, for 11 years of Everything Jewish, brought to you weekly right here on the radio. Now, since this also happens to be the very first Two Jewish show of the final month of the Jewish year, the month of Elul, in which we blow shofar each and every day of the month, the ram's horn, to prepare us for the coming of the 5774 New Year, we really need to do a little bit of that as well. And so, to kick off our 11th anniversary show this morning, starring Rick Moranis, here's a traditional set of shofar calls to awaken the spirit. That was the traditional shofar sequence of Tekiah Shvarim Trua Tekiah Gedola, blown each morning of the month of Elul on the ram's horn, as we prepare for the coming of the Jewish New Year, and of course celebrate the 11th anniversary of Too Jewish Today. Now, when we began the Too Jewish Radio Show 11 years ago, our goal was to reach out, entertain, and intrigue anyone and everyone who might be interested in Jewish life, ethics, culture, contemporary events, history, Israel, music, films, books, food, art, holidays, humor, anything and everything Jewish. Too Jewish was designed for Jews of all denominations and flavors, of course, but it was also created to help people who aren't Jewish learn about and be inspired by and even influenced by the fabulous religion and culture of Judaism. By exploring all aspects of Jewish life and living, without limiting ourselves to just one movement or ethnic or even national aspect, we hoped to explain what Judaism really is in the 21st century. In many ways, that means explaining what it has been for nearly 4,000 years, and continues to be today and for the foreseeable future. As Fiddler on the Roof taught, tradition. That is, on this Too Jewish Radio Show, we were going to explain and teach and celebrate and joke about Jewish tradition and make it referable to our discerning radio audience. Bring Jewish tradition to the world, broadly, intelligently, humorously. But a funny thing happened on the way to the airwaves. We discovered that contemporary Jewish life was about much more than tradition. It was also consistently about innovation. New and exciting things are happening everywhere in the Jewish world almost all the time. Judaism is very much about the process of engaging a great tradition with the best of contemporary life on a constant basis. It is this very dynamic process, this continuing evolution of our 3,800-year-old religion into something fresh and new, that is at the heart of Jewish survival and ongoing development. And that has made creating Too Jewish each and every week for 11 years a continual surprise and an ongoing delight. But some traditions need to be maintained nonetheless. One of those is enjoying the best of classic Jewish music. And so to play us in on this celebratory morning, we'll enjoy our now traditional and classic, but always new and exciting, Shehechianu, the prayer for all new and happy occasions. This one, written by Meir Machtenberg well over a century ago, sung by past two Jewish guests, cantor Alberto Mizrahi. Blessed are you, God, who gives us life, sustains us, and brings us to this happy occasion. That was from the CD by the Western Winds for Rosh Hashanah, Abe Mizrahi singing the prayer thanking God for celebrations, like our 11th anniversary of Two Jewish today. And while I am profoundly grateful to God for health and the ability to teach and explore and enjoy the amazing diversity of Judaism every week on the air, I am most grateful to you, our faithful listening audience, because you are what makes this show go and grow and change and flourish. We have a very special guest this morning on Two Jewish. It's actor and author of comedy, Rick Moranis, the star of Ghostbusters, Little Shop of Horrors, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Spaceballs, and a whole bunch of other movies, who has a brand new album out. It's called My Mother's Brisket and Other Love Songs, and it's quite wonderful and much Two Jewish. Here's the first release from that CD called Poo Poo Poo.
We ran into the Feldman's, man, did they look great. Mindy graduated with a 3.8. Milty says they're just about to renovate. And don't tell anybody, but Debbie is late. Poo, poo, poo. Poo, poo, poo. When it's good to be true. Poo, poo, poo. Murray was indicted for insider trading. They moved the case to Delaware. They're sitting and waiting. Running up a legal tab, their hopes were fading. Then Murray and the judge's sister started dating. Poo, poo, poo. Poo, poo, poo. When it's too good to be true. Poo, poo, poo. Call it what you like, a superstition. For me, it's just a logical position. I'm not claiming on honest premonitions, just historically informed intuition, an evolutionary predisposition. Possibilities of triggering a juicy Kanahara. Say what you like about me, but be careful, don't commit Lashon Hara. Horrible disasters happen easily, believe me, check the Torah.
had a little dandruff. It can happen when you're older. It'll go away with Selsun Blue, or so her sister told her. Herbal supplements and vitamins the health food store sold her. Nothing worked till she stopped throwing salt over her shoulder. Poo, poo, poo. Poo, poo, poo. If it's good to be true.
Our guest this morning, Rick Moranis, and his song, Poo Poo Poo, from his new album. When we return on Too Jewish in just a few moments, on this 11th anniversary show, you'll meet Rick Moranis, the Grammy-nominated comedian and comic writer who retired from show business after a very successful TV and movie career, and now has a wonderful album out of songs that are all Too Jewish.
A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 14th anniversary year. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. Now, it's your turn. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Batsheva Appel explore the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Taste of Judaism is an exciting opportunity for anyone who wants to gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. Taste of Judaism offers daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, plus the very popular Taste of Judaism Family Class, held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class, while kids enjoy Jewish stories, crafts, and activities with excellent THA teachers. There's no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila Vassar at 520-327-4501 for more information and to register today. That's 520-327-4501.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org.
Folks, it's time you experience the Jim Click difference at Jim Click Mazda. Get more discounts, more peace of mind, and more selection with 2 Mazda locations to serve you. The all-new 2014 Mazda 6 is now in stock and ready for immediate delivery. And folks, it's all-new body style. It looks absolutely great. And it's priced at only $249 a month. And the 2013 Mazda 3 is now a bid price of just $15,999. More discounts, more peace of mind, and more selection. 10 brands to choose from. That's the power to save. That's the Jim Click difference.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning for our 11th anniversary. He's Rick Moranis, the Canadian-American star who and 2-time Grammy-nominated musician in 1983 and 2005, and hopefully again soon for his new CD, My Mother's Brisket and Other Love Songs. Rick Moranis came to prominence in the early 80s doing sketch comedy on the wonderful show Second City TV, later appeared in a number of big Hollywood films, including the hits Strange Brew, Ghostbusters, Spaceballs, Little Shop of Horrors, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and its sequels, Parenthood, and many others. Moranis retired from acting in 1997, really from show business more or less, hasn't appeared in films since then, although he's done some voiceover work. His new album, Just Out, is kind of an homage to the late, great Alan Sherman. It's called My Mother's Brisket and Other Love Songs, a wonderful blend of klezmer, rumba, folk, and food, and it's maybe too Jewish. Tell us how this came about.
Well, first, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your show and your anniversary show as
Thank
well. It came about because I had gone back to songwriting. I always thought of myself as an aspiring musician from very early on. I always wrote songs, incorporated a lot of music into the comedy I was performing. And then about 10 years ago, I started writing a lot more songs more frequently. And then you mentioned that record that came out in 2005. That was in the country genre. And there was one song on there that dealt with a Jewish theme. And I think that might have opened the floodgates to do more songwriting with playing with different Jewish themes and Jewish language. And I had found that more and more contemporaries of mine were starting to use Yiddish words and Jewish expressions and going back to, if not the observance of the religion, the practice of the rituals, and incorporating more and more of the culture into their lives. I don't know why that is. You probably have a better handle on that than me. I don't know if it had to do with their parents getting older or them becoming their parents, which is what they say you're not supposed to do, or whether they were trying to instill those traditions and values in their children as their children were coming of age and getting older. Whatever the reason, I just found that these words were in my conversations and in my head more and more. And I also should point out that my mother, who's going to turn 88 in August,
Kinahara,
yeah, has one of the downsides of living to be that long and healthy is you survive so many other people. She's lost so many friends, so many family members, and to kind of fill the gap a little bit, so her phone rings a little more frequently, I found myself calling her very frequently and speaking to her more regularly than I had in 20, 30, however many years, and we developed this wonderful friendship, that a more intimate friendship than we'd had, a different kind of friendship than we'd had, and during those conversations, some of these ideas would come out, and I started writing songs based on some of those ideas, and one thing led to another, and I had enough for an album, and I decided to produce it.
It's a great album, and we'll talk much more about it with Rick Moranis on our 11th anniversary show of Too Jewish when we come back in just a moment. Among my most pleasant, at least time-consuming duties, I have the honor of serving as president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, which celebrates the memories of Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan, my own grandparents. Once a year, the foundation gives a substantial cash award to an individual for outstanding service to Klal Yisrael, the totality of the Jewish people. This service can involve any one of four different fields: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. If you know of anyone who might qualify for the 2013 Kohan Award, just visit our website, www.kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N, and you'll find the nomination form to submit. And while you're there, you can also learn just who my own grandparents were and who participates in honoring their memory today. That's kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N-A-W-A-R-D. It's a good visit.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts, but you can stream us from the website. As we celebrate our 11th anniversary on the air today, I took a few moments to look back on the featured guests we have had the privilege of interviewing on Too Jewish. Over 576 Too Jewish shows, we have interviewed Nobel Prize winners, Prime Ministers of Israel, Oscar, Emmy, and Grammy Award-winning actors and musicians, senators, congressmen, astronauts, rock stars, National Book Award-winning authors, poets, laureate, presidents of Jewish seminaries and universities, the leaders of every major American rabbinical association, the presidents and CEOs of the largest Jewish charities, the heads of the key Jewish political action centers, outstanding cantors and Jewish musicians, great and aspiring writers, wonderful poets, lots of academics, and many, many rabbis of all denominations. On Too Jewish, we've explored every issue under the Jewish sun, if you will, from kashrut to anti-Semitism, to pluralism in Israel, to Talmud, to atheism, to circumcision, to Jewish camps, to film, TV, and online depictions and communities of Jews, and on. We have looked at Jewish places and communities everywhere in the world and explored Jewish festivals and customs throughout time and all around the globe. And we have updated you regularly on life in Israel, showing all aspects from peace activists to settlers, from feminists to the ultra-Orthodox, of a fabulous and complicated Jewish nation. And we aren't close to being done yet. One of the little-known aspects of Too Jewish is that you can listen to every past show by going to TooJewishRadio.com and streaming us or podcasting us from iTunes, and lots of people do, from all over the world. We get emails and letters from Israel, Denmark, England, Australia, Canada, and all around the U.S., of course. Keep them coming, please. So while today we're celebrating our 11th anniversary of Too Jewish, we are now also officially in the period of preparation prior to the Jewish New Year of Rosh Hashanah, which begins the 5774 year on Wednesday evening, September 4th, just 2 days after Labor Day. As part of our musical preview of the Jewish High Holy Days, here's a beautiful rendition of the prayer for the major festivals, Atah V'chartanu, You God Chose Us, from Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan.
Ato v'chartonu mikol ha'amim ato osonu v'rotziso bonu.
Ato v'chartonu mikol ha'amim ato osonu v'rotziso bonu. Ve'erom namtanu mikol ha'sholos ve'kitashtonu be'mitzvos.
That was Atah V'chartanu, You God Chose Us, Loving Us, and Desiring Our Worship for the coming High Holy Day season, less than a month away now. When we come back on this 11th anniversary show of Too Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've really been talking about the neighborhood around Israel more than the Jewish communities particularly, but, you know, I was thinking, with all that's gone on in Egypt, of an incident when I visited Egypt with a group of rabbis some years ago, and we met with Mubarak, which sounds kind of ironic at the time, trying to further a peace process. We're staying at a Hilton hotel. We started chatting, this other rabbi, Bob Davis, and I, with the night manager, which is a kind of a good job for an Egyptian at, you know, this big Western fancy hotel. And he was talking about how he was engaged and he needed to put together the bride price, which was like $20,000 or $30,000 American dollars. And we thought, oh, wow, that's a lot, but that's what it takes before you get married in Egypt. And we wondered, like, how much money he was making. And we thought he must be making, you know, a good salary for there, $20,000 or $30,000. You know, it would take a while to save it up, but he could do it. And he told us he was making less than $3,000 a year. And we could not, like, for the life of us, figure out how somebody making that kind of money and supporting himself was ever going to save up enough money to get married. So I don't know what that shows about Egypt, but it just completely blew us away.
Right. Well, $200 a month, which is about $3,000 a year, if my math is correct.
Pretty close.
Is like considered a respectable salary in Egypt. And it's, you know, that's a good job. You're right, being night manager at the Hilton. And there are, if unless the situation has changed, two major Hiltons in the center of Cairo.
Right.
That kind of deep-seated irrational optimism that this guy who's making $3,000 a year and needs money to survive on is somehow going to be able to save up enough to pay a $30,000 bride price is fairly characteristic of what keeps Egypt going or what has kept it going. If you read Naguib Mahfouz, the Nobel
Egyptian
Prize-winning
novelist,
author, right, you see story after story that reveals this precise trait. And it's what enables the average Egyptian to carry on living and smiling and hoping and planning for tomorrow in a world which gives little realistic or rational cause for optimism. But we're going to talk about the disparate groups in Egypt and what their agendas are and why it would be hard for any one leader, unless he or she was a master of multilateral international diplomacy and balancing conflicting interests, to deal with all these. And, you know, basically, you definitely have secularists and, let's say, radical Islamists, for want of a better term. But you also have rural versus urban, traditional versus progressive, older generation versus younger. I mean, there are lots of people in Egypt who have no idea what Facebook and Twitter are.
Well, some of them don't know what a laptop is, don't know what a computer is. And
whereas lots of younger people, even if they are poor, have friends with access to computers, or in school they have access to computers. So they know about these media, even if they don't use them all the time. So there are lots of polarities in Egypt, and more than political parties per se, I think these polarities and where people find themselves along any one of these sliding scales, I think they make it hard for any leader to be responsive to the popular voice, because there is no voice. There are voices, and it's a cacophony of voices.
Well, maybe we can hear more about that cacophony of voices next week.
I look forward to it.
Thanks, Tom. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Sadie and Maury are celebrating their 25th wedding anniversary with a group of friends. But Maury looks so unhappy that his best friend Moshe, a criminal lawyer, goes up to him. "What's the matter, Maury?" he asks. "Why do you look so sad?" "You remember, Moshe, on my 5th anniversary, I asked you what would happen if I murdered Sadie?" "Yes," answered Moshe. "I said you'd get 20 years in jail." "Well," says Maury, "I would have been a free man tonight." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and be free. And now a word of Torah, a question. What are the most important Jewish laws? Our weekly Torah portion of Ki Teitzeh in Deuteronomy obligates us to ask this question. It is filled with an array of laws and ordinances affecting every aspect of life. They range from rules limiting unorthodox ritual practices to rules limiting conduct in wartime, from personal morality to behavior in society. Family laws are established concerning marriage, inheritance, and divorce. Tort laws on damages are instituted, providing moral and financial responsibility for property owners. Laws of kindness decree human decency in every area of life. Lots and lots of laws, 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 some obscure, some famous. In short, reading Ki Teitzeh is interesting, but dry. There's a reason law books never make the New York Times bestseller list. Additionally, some of the legislation is outdated. Other sections are irrelevant. But two sets of related laws established in Parshat Ki Teitzeh by themselves guarantee its place in the highest of moral realms. Both put into practical terms what the Torah has already stressed. When a person is in your power economically, you must not exploit his weakness. The first of these states that if you take as pledge an item of clothing from a poor person, you must return it to him before nightfall. In other words,
You cannot allow an impoverished man or woman to spend the night without proper clothing or shelter. This is a necessary reminder for our society, which tolerates homelessness in a manner that the much poorer world of the Torah's time simply did not. It is not Jewishly acceptable to tolerate blatant disregard for human misery. The second law states unequivocally and memorably that you must pay a worker on the day he completes his labor. In our society, delays of 2 weeks and more are common for payrolls, even for minimum wage employees who need the money most. Money is often withheld from workers who have earned it to pay for anticipated taxes, health care needs, and other deductions. This would not fly in the Torah or the Talmud, which at the least implies God's disapproval for such practices. Created over 2,500 years ago, the Torah insists on a higher standard of morality for employers than we do today. As Abraham Lincoln, by the way, the first Republican president, said, labor is prior to and independent of capital. Capital is only the fruit of labor and could never have existed if labor had not first existed. Labor is the superior of capital and deserves much the higher consideration. Labor has innate value, and honest work deserves immediate pay. It's a simple lesson, and one we still, as a society, haven't quite learned. In an era in which employers continue to ask for wage concessions, give pay cuts for the same or more work, and cut benefits and jobs, in a period when management feels empowered to fire anyone at any time without notice or severance, perhaps it's time to allow Ki Tetzé to teach us these great lessons again. When we come back on this 11th anniversary show of Two Jewish, our guest, the wonderful comic writer and actor Rick Moranis, explains what makes some comedy Two Jewish. Find out when we come back on Two Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace. But sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Folks, it's time for you to experience the Jim Click Kia difference. Get more discounts, more peace of mind, and more selection. 2013 Kia Soul is now starting at just $14,988 and only $159 a month. So drive home the fuel-efficient 2013 Kia Rio, special event price only $159 a month. And remember, every Kia comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. More discounts, more peace of mind, and more selection, 10 brands to choose from. That's the power to save. That's the Jim Click difference. Kia, the power to surprise.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A new initiative drawn up by the Israeli Prime Minister's office and the Jewish Agency is looking to end waiting lists for Birthright trips to Israel for young Jewish people. Since its inception, Birthright has brought over 340,000 young Jews to Israel, but in recent years its numbers have shrunk due to budgetary limitations. The new plan, said to cost about $30 million, subsidized by Israeli taxpayers along with outside donations, will offer financial support for the mythical 10-day journeys. Well, they're not really mythical, but they're spectacular. It's not clear whether Israelis are interested in funding these trips, but Jewish Agency Director Alan Hoffman is confident. If approved and funded, the new process will start in the year 2015, making Birthright trips an actual, well, birthright for all Jewish college-age kids in America and Canada. And while the failure of Israel's electric car startup Better Place has made headlines as a huge startup disaster, other Israeli high-tech companies continue to flourish and, well, make a lot of money. Last week, Israeli entrepreneur Amir Ashkenazi scored a second major success. The U.S. internet company AOL agreed to buy his Adapt.tv for $405 million. AOL will pay $322 million in cash, another $83 million in AOL stock for the California-based startup, a deal that will close in the third quarter of this year. Co-founded in 2006 by Amir Ashkenazi and Chief Product Officer Ted Greeniger, Adapt.tv is a platform for buying and selling digital video advertising. This sale is Ashkenazi's second giant one after Shopping.com, an e-commerce site that was acquired by eBay in 2005 for $620 million. Although Adapt.tv's Vice President for Engineering, Nir Yefet, is an Israeli, unlike lots of U.S. startups formed by Israelis, the company does not conduct R&D in Israel. The acquisition by AOL, the company whose $400 million acquisition of the online chat startup ICQ way back in 1998 sparked the Israeli high-tech boom, is part of the company's effort to become the leading platform in the online video industry and invest further in the broad field of digital advertising. Adapt.tv will operate as an independent unit in AOL's video group, run by company senior vice president Ron Harnivo, an Israeli, and formerly the CEO of Israeli startup 5min Media, acquired by AOL back in 2010. Lots of Jewish sports news this week. FC Barcelona, one of the top club teams in the world, with its star Lionel Messi and its new hero Brazilian prodigy Neymar, toured Israel last week, visiting the Kotel, the Western Wall, as part of a whirlwind two-day peace tour, including an exhibition in Jaffa for 12,000 wildly cheering young fans. Play football and make friends, Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres, speaking in English, told the sold-out crowd at the beginning of the evening. Don't make war and make enemies. He went on to call the Barcelona players ambassadors for peace, while Education Minister Shai Piron, speaking in Hebrew, trumpeted the fact that child athletes represent Israel's geographic, socioeconomic, and religious diversity. Perez kicked off the event literally by kicking the ball to Lionel Messi. The Barca superstar may have anticipated a delicate pass from the aged president, but the 90-year-old Perez whacked it towards his midriff from close range. Messi did his best to control the ball as his teammates, laughing, looked on. Great stuff. Fun and a wonderful message of peace as Israeli-Palestinian peace talks start to muddle along. Martin Indyk, the U.S. envoy for these peace talks and a past guest of Too Jewish, will be in Israel this week meeting with non-soccer people, including the official delegations of both the Israelis and the Palestinians. In other Jewish-tinged sports news, Amari Stoudemire, the New York Knicks basketball star who claims Jewish roots and recently toured Israel, is seeking Israeli citizenship. Stoudemire's agent, Happy Walters, such an agent name, said that the Knicks power forward is in the process of becoming an Israeli. He's getting citizenship, Walters said. He's applied. Stoudemire went to Israel for the Maccabiah games as the assistant coach of the Canadian basketball squad. The games ended last week. Stoudemire's Jewish connections have been the source of much media fascination in recent months, some of it on Too Jewish. At his wedding last year to Alexis Welsh, Stoudemire donned a yarmulke and a tallis for the Hebraic ceremony. In July of this year, he announced he became a part owner in the Israeli basketball club Hapoel Yerushalayim. And in an interview in Jerusalem, Stoudemire said he is in regular dialogue with New York rabbis, studies Torah, and observes the High Holy Days. I'm not a religious person, I'm more of a spiritual person, says Stoudemire, so I follow the rules of the Bible that coordinate with and connect with the Hebrew culture. Perhaps Stoudemire's continuing connection with Judaism will help keep him healthy and on the basketball court for the Knicks this season. And one of the first Jewish owners in professional sports, Jerry Wolman, a small-town grocer's son who made a fortune as a Washington real estate developer, owned the National Football League's Philadelphia Eagles and helped found the NHL's Philadelphia Flyers in the 1960s, died last week in Potomac, Maryland. Wolman was 86 years old. I believe that Carol Rosenblum, who owned the Colts and then the Rams, was the first Jewish owner in the NFL, certainly the most influential. He was pivotal in the hiring of Pete Rozelle and the making of the modern NFL. But after Rosenblum, Jerry Wallman came next. The Eagles have had Jewish owners ever since. There are currently 11 Jewish owners in the NFL, maybe more than there are Jewish players, by far the most successful American professional sports league. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. He's Rick Moranis, the terrific Canadian-American actor, star, who retired from show business, but has made some wonderful Grammy-nominated music and has a new album out, My Mother's Brisket and Other Love Songs, which is really just delightful and terrific. Rick, we talked a little bit earlier about how you came to create this album. I love, really, the whole thing. Is it Two Jewish?
It's probably too Jewish for a large segment of the general audience that isn't Jewish. Now, having said that, many of the musicians that played on the record and also the demo that I did before it were non-Jews, and they loved the material, although I did explain, you know, whatever the key word setup was or the key idea behind it. A couple of people asked me if I was considering including a glossary or something like that, and I decided not to because when I heard that 85% of record sales these days is in the form of digital downloads, I thought, well, it's a simple click away to Wikipedia or something like that to get the definition of a word that someone might not know. But it is aimed at a Jewish audience, no question about that. And I say in the liner notes, you know, you call your show Too Jewish. I mention that in my liner notes.
Thank you for the plug, by the way. I appreciate
it. You're welcome. We used to say that to each other when I first started writing comedy with other Jewish partners on sketch shows and writing monologues and jokes for variety shows at the CBC back in the 70s, you know, trying to come up with something that funny when you're being paid, you're in an office and you don't have anything. It's a feeling of being trapped and you'll do anything to get out. And we would explore areas that would lead us into things that made us laugh hysterically until one of us would say, wait a second, it's too Jewish. We could never sell this to the show. And I guess the difference with this record was because I was producing it myself, there was nobody that I had to sell it to. I could just do whatever I wanted. So I took that filter off, so to speak, and just wrote about things I wanted to.
You know, I love that song, Poo Poo Poo, because in my family, like yours, I assume, when my grandmother wanted to say something and, you know, it was good and you didn't want to invoke the evil eye, you didn't knock on wood. That was a Christian thing. You did this sort of imitating spitting three times. I don't think you have to understand that to love that song, but that had to be part of your thinking.
Well, that's what the song is about.
Right.
It's when it's too good to be true, poo, poo, poo. And all the verses are, you know, end with a hint of good news, which leads to a chorus of poo, poo, poo.
Right.
Now, there are a couple of bridges in there that have very specific Yiddish and Jewish references, but I think people, once they hear the record, do understand it. Even more secular Jews that might not know the references understand it. And the reason, the motivation for writing it, my mother always said it too, and I'm sure my grandmother did, though I don't recall. But I noticed my sister starting to say it all the time. And then last Labor Day, we were up in Toronto for a wedding, and I ran into an older cousin of mine, hadn't seen her for a while, and I said, you know, your grandson is incredible. His YouTube video has about 8,000 hits on it, and I'm responsible for about 1,000 of them. He is brilliant. She said, poo, poo, poo. And I said, that's it. I am writing a song. Because everybody was saying it. All these formerly young people were now out the cucker saying poo, poo, poo.
It happens to all of us. It's funny. We were naming this show. We couldn't come up with a name for a while, and so we were going to call it Shema Yisrael. And people said, well, that's a good name, but it's too Jewish. And it's like, okay, that's the name.
I was going to call this record Too Jewish and got talked out of it by a couple of people.
Well, you know, we would have taken the cross-marketing plug. Would have been fantastic. You know, this is a weird question. You were in movie business with great success. It seemed to me you were always either an alien or married to an alien, except in the Flintstones, which we won't talk about. Was that sort of a Jewish persona somehow? You always seemed to me to be that.
I think it had more to do with just the time that I was involved in the movie business. There was a real kind of push towards science fiction. I think comedy responded to what Spielberg and Lucas were doing, and special effects were starting to get a little more popular. And so writers were playing with those forms, and I just happened to arrive as a comic actor at that time. That's my guess. I think if I'd have been around making movies in the 40s and 50s, it would have been a different kind of thing.
Different genre.
Always impressed me that you were a very good singer. I mostly think about A Little Shop of Horrors. Here you got a chance to kind of unleash your pipes, although mostly it's for humor. Tell me about your musical background.
Well, sadly, I didn't listen to my mother when she tried to get me piano lessons. That was a big mistake. I was a rebellious kid. But I do remember when we literally put down our hockey sticks and picked up electric guitars. It was the early 60s in the suburbs of Toronto, and we all, when the Beatles hit, that was it. It was the end of hockey players being our heroes, and now the Beatles were our heroes, and we all somehow scraped together the money, bar mitzvah money, part-time work money, whatever it was, and we got guitars, and we tried to be bands. And I never stopped playing guitar, poorly, not well enough to play on my records, but well enough to play songs for my kids when they were young, and I still enjoy it. Singing, you know, I don't consider myself a singer, and the wonderful thing about studio production is you can do a number of takes and patch things together.
Yeah,
But I enjoy making records. I enjoy the process of music production a lot, and really the only way that I can do it is to write songs, and I like the puzzles of songwriting. I like the wordplay, and I like the challenge, and I've always loved music, so that's why I do it.
I love that line about Murray getting indicted for insider trading, and then he and the judge's daughter started dating.
Boop, boop, boop. There was the good news.
Very good. You do a wonderful Haftorah song, and I, as a cantor as well as a rabbi, I can tell you your Haftorah trope's pretty good in English. What was the inspiration for the late Haftorah, the late Bar Mitzvah song?
Well, I always wanted to do something with that melody, and I guess the reason I know it so well is because I had a pretty extensive bar mitzvah training, because my mother wanted me not to just do the mufter and a tiny little Haftorah portion. She wanted me to do the whole thing, so I did the whole portion of the Torah, and then I did a whole Haftorah. And I've always loved those melodies, and I was reintroduced to it because the musician that I did the demo with had done a jazz arrangement of it, which I think you can find on YouTube. His name is Paul Shapiro, And he did a jazz arrangement of the Haftorah, and it is fantastic. He does a performance live in Krakow at some festival.
There's a big klezmer festival there.
Yeah. And I think that got it in my head as well. And I wanted to do something with it. And then when I had the idea, because I didn't want to do it as a 13-year-old kid, that wouldn't be believable. And I didn't want to, you know, do that kind of comedy. Once I had the hook for how to be a 46-year-old guy doing it, which was to make him a red diaper baby, then it was fun to write. And at that point, I took it on.
You know, it's not everybody that can include on a comedy album stuff about balabustas and Shiva minions. The 7 days of Shiva had me plotzing. That, to me, is an Alan Sherman song, or the most like an Alan Sherman song on your album. What do you? Any reflections on that?
Well, you know, the only Alan Sherman song I ever heard was Hello Mudda, because Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, because in the early 60s, I was listening to AM radio and rock music, mostly. And we didn't have a record player. And a friend of mine did have the You Don't Have to Be Jewish albums. And I also remember somebody had the 2,000-Year-Old Man. But I've never heard any other Alan Sherman. The reason I mentioned Alan Sherman in the publicity was because I wanted to kind of indicate to the audience that this is a Jewish record, or at least to, you know, anyone who might remember who Alan Sherman was, because I really didn't want to mislead anybody that might be part of an old fan base and buy this thing and not understand it and whatever. So I mentioned the You Don't Have to Be Jewish albums in Alan Sherman. I wasn't writing with Alan Sherman in mind. I wasn't writing with anybody in mind other than stuff that I wanted to do and themes that I wanted to play with. In terms of Shivas, we all understand the value of a Shiva and the importance of them, and there are times when they really do serve a wonderful purpose. But there are other times when, you know, it turns into something else. And what I've noticed these days is that more and more people are having three-day Shivas, but they haven't...
Yeah.
They haven't termed it a shlosha for some reason.
No.
They're still calling it a shiva.
Yeah, what's that? Seven is now three. Three is the new seven.
Three is the new seven. Very good. You know, when I was growing up, I used to hear my mother on the phone with her sisters, and I'd hear pieces of conversations where they would say things like, where she would say things like, "What do you mean we can't get a dinner? We're closer to them than we can only send in a lunch? What do you mean all the dinners were booked?" And I couldn't believe that. Just struck me so funny. And then when we lost my dad, which was a long time, like 15 years ago or so, and he had been sick, and it was no surprise, and everyone was wonderful, and my mother wanted to sit a full 7 days, but I have never in my life seen an endless parade of catering. And there was one guy who apparently owns the catering, the Shiva catering business in Toronto. And I got very used to seeing his tinfoil and his logo and the whole thing coming in, and it was just beyond words.
Some very funny things about the size of the kugel, but and that kiss my mezuzah concept. Very powerful.
Well, that's a little bit of a take on the patriarchal nature of the more Orthodox Jews, the relationship between the husband and wife. And, you know, I was going for a little bit of satire there.
Just a little bit.
The motivation for it was that I was once in somebody's house, and they walked in and out of every door and kissed every single
mezuzah.
They kept kissing the mezuzah, and I just thought, I thought it was hilarious and absurd, and it just never lost its effect on me.
It's a good song. What do your kids think about the album?
They're very happy with it. My daughter was around during the process, and I used her as a sounding board for feedback as I was adding different tracks and making decisions about things, and she shot the cover photos and the inside jacket photo, and I used her for some feedback on the package design. My son was much more occupied and during the whole thing, and when he finally heard the record, I had given him an indication of the songs early on when I first started, and he kind of looked at me, you know, somewhat dubiously, and he did really love the belated Haftorah, though. That, I remember his reaction to that. But when I finally played him the whole thing, he took off the headphones, and he said more succinctly than anyone else, he said exactly he sort of hit it right on the head. He took the headphones off, and he said, "Boy, did you ever need to get this out of your system."
Well, and thank you for getting it out of your system. It's a great album. My Mother's Brisket and Other Love Songs from Rick Moranis. Thanks for a great visit here on Too Jewish.
Thanks so much for having me. What a pleasure to talk to you, and many, many more anniversaries for you.
Thank you. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical playout from Rick Moranis on this 11th anniversary show.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks so much for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, for our 11th anniversary show of Too Jewish. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. We begin our 12th year of great Jewish radio. Our guest will be Professor Eric Goldman, talking about his new book, The American Jewish Story Through Cinema. Our playout this morning comes from, who else? Rick Moranis, from My Mother's Brisket and Other Love Songs, the delightfully sacrilegious The 7 Days of Shiva. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
On the first day of Shiva, the Stolberg sent in the biggest potato kugel I've ever seen. On the second day of Shiva, the Katzmans had delivered two tureens of borscht, and a bigger potato kugel than the Stahlbergs. On the third day of Shiva, the apple bomb sent over three steamed pastrami's, two tureens of borscht, and an even bigger potato kugel than the Stahlbergs or the Katzmans. On the fourth day of Shiva, the Resniks came and brought four pickled tongues, three steamed pastrami's, two tureens of borscht, and we had to leave their kugel in the hall. On the fifth day of Shiva, the Rubinovs dropped off five plates of smoked fish, four pickled tongues, three steamed pastrami's, two tureens of borscht, and we finally finished the Stahlbergs kugel from the first day. On the sixth day of Shiva, the Greenwalds walked in with 6 pounds of liver, five plates of smoked fish.